Alrighty, everybody, let's make a start nice and promptly. I would like to welcome everybody to the meeting this evening. Hopefully everybody can hear me clearly, and everyone should ensure their mobile telephones are switched off or switched to silent, and the use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. Members of the public should not speak during the meeting and may be temporarily excluded for discussion of in-committee items. I would remind members of their obligations under the Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interest which they may have in any item of business before the meeting today. If you have such an interest, please declare it now or immediately before the item, start stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the chamber for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in any vote. You will then be invited back to join the meeting once the discussion has ended. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded, except where Council is considering any exempt matters. Members should remember that the microphones work in a queuing system. If your microphone is lit red, you have precedence. Flashing green is next in the queue, and then solid green. Please do not press your microphone button again when it is lit up red, as you will lose your place in the queue. There may be some members in attendance virtually, and it's been agreed that all members in the chamber are brought in to speak on an issue before any remote delegates. Therefore, if you are attending remotely, please use the chat function to indicate your wish to speak. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. Alrighty. Item number one, any apologies?
Start with apologies for Councillors Devlin, Anna, Hi, Kern, Mathers and Traysdale.
Lovely. And any declarations of interest? Lovely. Alrighty, we'll move on to item number three then. So we have Joanne and Rebecca here from the Northern Ireland Ambulance Service, and they're going to give us a little presentation, so I'll hand over to them.
Hiya, evening everybody. Just to introduce ourselves, I'm Becky Speer, Area Manager for the South East Area of Northern Ireland Ambulance Service, and this is Joanne McGuire, my colleague that manages the Southern Area, an Area Manager for Northern Ireland. There's some little bits missing off the slide, so I'm going to hope that they're in there. There was a title just saying working together to improve emergency response 2026. So the content's going to outline the NIAS position, clinical delivery models, challenges and opportunities. Just some facts and figures from 25-26. So crews that were deployed to incident was 157,995 during that period. Patients treated over the phone that's called Hear and Treat, there were 19,612, which meant that they didn't receive an ambulance response and were safely received alternative care. 12 minutes and 3 seconds was the average response time to our Category 1 calls, which is got a target of 8 minutes, but it was an improvement on the year before. We answered over 240,000 calls, and the calls are more than the actual incidents responded to, because we get a lot of duplicates if we've got waiting patients, as well as of the calls that come into the control room. We had 99,541 hospitals arrivals, exceeding 30-minute turnaround, which is our standard for turnarounds. We conveyed 113,891 of the 157,995 to hospital. We've got 42 rapid response vehicles, officers and ambulance cars, 116 double crewed emergency ambulance vehicles on per day. 81% calls were answered within 5 seconds. Our target's 90% within 5 seconds, with the national target. 19,612 patients provided with advice from the control room, so for Hear and Treat services. We've got 112 non-emergency ambulance vehicles that support our emergency fleet, and we've got 5 operating divisions, which is north, south, south-east, west and the Belfast areas at this time. We've got 59 ambulance stations or deployment points that we utilise. The landscape's changing, and there's a lot of work going on in the background. So the core remit of any statutory ambulance service is always to provide an emergency response to those with a life-threatening health need and to respond to major incidents. We're simplifying access to care and coordinating the navigation of care through patients Hear and Treat, See and Treat, and alternative care pathways. We need to assess more people remotely and enhance mobile care, share data and learn across all systems working collaboratively, integrate care pathways and improve the ones that we've got at the moment, and identified uniform across the whole of Northern Ireland and reduce avoidable conveyances for admission to hospital to reduce pressures there. Our current delivery model, this is just broken down. The main point of this, although it's numerous, are at the moment we're conveying approximately 75% of our patients that we attend to hospital and 15% adhere and treat. In the future, what we're aiming for by putting numerous strategies in place is to reduce safely the conveyance to emergency departments to 45%, which will reduce the workload on our hospitals and increase our availability to respond to the community's needs. And if we could focus on 55% of patients treated or directed outside to the appropriate care outside of the emergency department that's under pressure. Some of the high-level challenges we've got at the moment include the hospital handovers being delayed, alternatives to emergency departments, which are our pathways, our response times that are impacted by our challenges, and our resourcing levels as well, and access to staff quickly when we need to increase the workforce. I'm not sure if you've heard of Release to Rescue. There's a collaborative need to ensure that we turn ambulances round from waiting outside of ED with patients. It causes, obviously, harm to patients and reduces our availability to respond to those in an emergency. Since it got implemented in April, and we're in step one of the approach, and I know behind the scenes they're working towards further improvements. Now, the data set at the bottom of this, we've just spotted, is wrong, so I do apologise. That's 25 versus 26, not 24 and 25. So the number of lost hours at emergency departments for Daisy Hill, Craig, Avon and the Ulster before Release to Rescue start was sort of flattering around 4,000 to 5,000 hours. That's the amount of time that's taken off our response times per month to respond to patients in the community, and actually peaked in December, January 25, 26 to 7,000 hours. Since the Release to Rescue on, I believe it was the 1st of April, it's actually reduced to around 2,000 hours, and some of that will be the amount of time that we've actually planned into our model of operation. Also, since Release to Rescue, there's been a significant reduction in lost hours and patients being delayed 2 hours at the hospital department. So the number of patients delayed above 2 hours at the EDs since Release to Rescue, it was plateauing around just under 800 as an average, went above 1,000 crews per month delayed. And then as soon as Release to Rescue came in, we've dropped to 200, which is a huge amount. There's a slight increase. We're currently under demand at the moment, but it's been obvious decrease in our last time and the number of patients waiting outside of hospital. So I touched on alternative pathways earlier. We've got lots of work to do in this area. We can't do it alone. It's making sure the patients get the right care at the right place and alternative to ED. And accessing capacity are the key challenges that need to be addressed, and that's being worked on by departments within the organisation. You can see there's a steady increase of use on that chart there. We need it to be more. I can't recall what the exact figure is, but we need to increase that more to reduce the conveyances to hospital, and there's a shortfall of alternative pathways at this time. Resourcing is a challenge, and there's a lot of work going on with the workforce planning, the education in the background. This is a slide that's just got paramedic staffing on. We've got technicians as well as ambulance care assistants. So unfortunately, I haven't got those figures. But March 25 in Newry, we had 17.76 paramedics. By June, we should have 20.76. With a plan by March to have 21.76. Kilkeel had 3. It's been up to 5 in June, and then still sitting at 5 in March. Newcastle in March 25 was 4. We've dropped to 3. There's not a plan for extras, but there's still work ongoing for transfers, etc., to increase that number. And Downpatrick has increased from 10 to 12.6 as we are at the moment. And there's a further 2 planned to be in the next few from things like the NQP programme exam, for example. It's also worth noting there are paramedics within the control room helping as to speak to the patients, and that they're clinically trained with the extra skills so that they can actually divert the resource. Instead of sending an ambulance every time, they can actually do the calls remotely, which is a tried and tested situation. It's called the Integrated Clinical Hub, and there's been a lot of succession. I'm planning to go into that to reduce the impact on frontline ambulances so they are available for the patients that need them. So response times, our Category 1 aim is in line with the target is 8 minutes and Category 2 is 18 minutes. As you can see, 24, 25, near and morning down, we're 17 minutes, 35 for a Category 1 call, outside the performance target, and Category 2 averaged at 1.35. This year we've improved and we're improving again with release to rescue, and those figures aren't in, but we've dropped to 15 minutes, 30. For the Category 1 and 1 hour 17 for the Category 2. And these are a key indicator for us of the challenges that we face. The release to rescue has facilitated an improvement in these, but we've got a lot more to do, which we're all working towards. So opportunities for collaboration, we thought we'd touch on this. So we've got access to alternatives in the community for referrals. Community first responses, which is a voluntary sector that can respond to cardiac arrest, etc. Resource strategy, CPR training, access to defibrillators, awareness at events and education. Finally, just to touch on the last slide and the importance of our volunteers and getting to the course quickly, which we strive to do so in the timeliest manner that we can. Every minute reduces your chance of survival, and that's what that chart is. After a minute, it reduces to 90, all the way to 9, which is where our response targets are set for those that need us. In this area, we've got 88 active we have CFR schemes in the areas on that are listed on there. 88 active CFRs, 436 AEDs registered at the time. 81% of AEDs are emergency ready. 398 AED deployments in the last year alone, and 60% of the AEDs are 24/7 and availability, and 40% are varied access. That's just to their, due to their location. Those are the figures off our community first responder lead. Should come up. So thank you for listening, and if you've got any questions, we are happy to take them.
Yeah, just to say thank you so much for your presentation and for all of the work that you do within our communities. I think the stats at the start were actually quite staggering, the number of incidents and number of hours and patients that you treat. So thank you very much for all of the work that you do. And then if there's any questions. Yeah, Councillor Hardy.
Cormac Kerlock, thank you very much for your presentation. I actually wanted to ask a wee bit about release to rescue and how it's been bedding in, but you've pretty much covered most of it in your presentation there. I'm delighted to see that the effect of it has been so dramatic and so quick. Perhaps you don't know about this end of it, but great to see that it's having an effect on response times, on lost hours and all that. Has there been any kind of negative knock-on effect on the ED side of it in terms of places to put patients while waiting for handovers and things like that, or maybe you don't deal with that end of it at all?
I think, to be fair, that's not something we can directly comment on. It definitely has been a challenge for the departments, but it's one that they've all taken on and that they are all contributing towards, and there's a real effort from both ourselves and all the health trusts to try and make Release to Rescue a success.
Councillor Jackson.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, just following like the main feedback that I would get from constituents on the ground is obviously about response times. And I know we've looked at Category 1 and Category 2. I suppose the fear with people is if a Category 2 gets worse during that, it becomes a Category 1 and they're still waiting on an ambulance. So, I mean, some of the times that I would feedback on is scary, to be honest with you, you know. So, what measures can be done to improve that, or, you know, going forward? Thanks, Chair.
No, I totally take your point. I think certainly, as Becky touched on, the role of ICH, they are very important in relation to patients deteriorating. The clinicians in the control room will welfare callbacks to the calls that are waiting in the stack to check on a patient's condition. So the hope would be that if anybody does deteriorate, they will be recategorised. That will increase the response time. as you said quite rightly, some of the response times have been scary, but we have seen such a marked improvement since Release to Rescue. We also have Category 1 release with all the hospitals. So if there's a confirmed Category 1 in the area, the ED will release the crew to respond immediately.
Councillor Bosley.
I had a constituent that had a stroke there a few months ago. They rang for an ambulance. A few hours later, still wasn't there. They asked for ETA. They were told to be another 2 hours. During that time, that person could have taken their own father to the hospital instead of wasting 4 hours. So they ended up just taking in himself, and thankfully they got him there just in time. But I don't know if that's a normal thing, is to not give ETAs out so that stroke victims' families can take them straight to the hospital instead of necessary delays. Thanks.
I'm going to be quite honest and say I'm not 100% sure I'm giving out the ETAs. I'm also not able to comment, obviously, on any individual call. As I said to the previous gentleman, calls can be recategorised. If they recontacted control, they could have possibly gone back through the categorisation process, but I'm not sure on the ETA side of it.
No, so and I'll just give a very brief overview. So what? There's so many elements to that call, and if we need to look at it, obviously, please get in touch. But if we're under period of demand, we have what they call CSP escalations in scripts within the control room. So if we know that we're in an area and it's at a certain level, they will have certain scripts that do include ETA scripts, the estimated time of arrival scripts for them. There's so many parameters with that, so it would need to be looked at, but there are things that trigger that, but there's also certain categories they won't do because they endeavour to get an ambulance there unless it's a Category 2 and keep getting Category 1s, and that's where it becomes a little bit challenging.
And Councillor Andrews?
Thanks very much, Chair, and first of all, thanks for coming along this evening, and I know the previous two speakers alluded to call-out times and the estimated times of arrivals and everything, but another cause of concern, and I'm sure you're working closely with the Trust, is the backups at the hospitals, whatever ambulances come to the hospitals to discharge in the hospital care, and then it's the waiting times at the hospital. That's putting us under a lot of pressure, and just wondering, is there any further joined up approaches regarding the hospital handovers, etc.? For I know that doesn't help matters either, that ambulances are tied up at hospitals. So, but again, all the staff are doing a first class job right across the health service and support them 100%. But that would be a major cause of concern, similar to the previous speakers, with times, etc. Thank you.
No, it absolutely is a concern. And as Becky said, the Release to Rescue has brought down our handover time to the 2 hour mark. That is the first step in Release to Rescue. There are plans ahead to move it down to 90 minutes and then 45 for handover. I can't give you the actual dates on those yet. I don't think they've been confirmed, but it has definitely had a marked improvement for us, and it allows us to reduce, hopefully, the risk to the patients in the community.
Barry Larkin.
Thank you, Chair. It was reassuring to see the increase in staffing levels within the local hospitals and ambulance stations. Just wondering, in relation to vacancies within the service, how many are there? Where are they located? And also, for those that may be considering a career as paramedics, the ambulance service, are the pathways available here in the north for them to train or take courses to ensure that they progress?
Again, I'm going to be totally honest and say I don't know our current vacancy level. I am aware that we have more vacancies within our EMT tier than we have in our paramedic tier corps at the minute. Paramedic training within the north is now done by the Ulster University, the degree course. We also do in-house training for ambulance care attendants, which is our sort of patient transport level. Those recruitments happen roughly once to two times a year. And then we also have EMT in-house training, which again provides there's another pathway to the paramedic through an in-house route.
And if there's nobody else online, I think we have Councillor, or in the chamber, we have Councillor Rice online.
Thanks, Chair. It's just I wanted to touch on, I know it was mentioned there within the presentation, the defibrillator machines. There was one in Addycall, it was required, but there was a bit of an issue with, between the call handler and the person needing it, the family member getting through. Is there any way that can be sort of streamlined? It just seems to be that there's a lot of sort of bureaucracy to get through before the code is given then to release the defibrillator. I know in that instance the family are a wee bit flustered and they were probably getting good instruction, it's just they weren't following it, if you know what I mean, and time has been lost then. So that was just, I'm thinking of sort of rural areas that where you have your defibrillator in the sort of central part. Is there any way to sort of streamline the access to it when it's needed in an emergency?
Thank you for that comment. Again, it's not an area that I would know everything about. Obviously, like you say, anybody phoning in that circumstance, they are going to be extremely distraught at that point. If you want to feed that one back to us, I'm quite happy to have that go back to our CFR lead and see if he can provide you with a more robust answer than I can, unless Becky has anything to add to that one. It's not a process that I'm overly aware of how it actually works in the control room.
And then we have Councillor Feehan.
Sorry, Chair. Just would it be possible to get the contact details then for that, just so I can follow up after tonight's meeting?
Yeah, that's no problem at all. Is that everything, Councillor Rice? He's gone.
Yeah, Councillor Feehan. That's it. Thanks.
Yes, thanks. Thanks very much, Chair. And also just to echo what you had said, Derry, in terms of just thanking the ambulance service and all of the crews that are out all over the place. The work you do is absolutely vital, and it's, you know, it's a stressful job that you have. So we very much appreciate the role that you play in the community. It's really reassuring to see some of the improvements that you're speaking about there. And, you know, hopefully that continues. And I suppose that's what my question is geared towards, you know, as what does local representatives, are we able to do to support you and the broader ambulance service in kind of keeping things moving in the right direction? I'll be keen to kind of take something away in that regard. Thanks very much.
Yeah, I guess probably education is one of the main things for us. I guess education amongst your constituents in relation to things like the community first responders and that the AEDs are out there, just raising awareness of schemes such as that. The CPR training as well. I guess the support for those sort of events that we are taking part in.
Thanks very much.
And then we have Councillor Byrne.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. You put up in your presentation the numbers there, and obviously in the next, by March 2027, it's going to increase across Newry, Newcastle and Downpatrick for paramedics. You're sitting at the Newry area at around 17, 3 in Newcastle and 12 in Downpatrick is your current numbers. I have a concern around the area the paramedics that are stationed in, how far they're being sent. And I'm not going to go into a specific incident, but it's a question that's raised from incidents in the last 6 months where we had Newry crews and a night where there was one Newry crew on, but they had been sent to Newcastle twice. Newry crew had been sent to Auchnacloy, Dungannon, Coal Island, Craigavon, and that leaves the Newry area not covered when that crew has been sent so far. So it's all right us looking at the figures of, you know, the numbers of paramedics in Newcastle, but that's obviously been supplemented by the bigger numbers in the Newry area. Is there any data that's been kept or taken about how far crews are being sent and if that's leaving certain areas short of emergency crews? And that follows on to another question from that night where that one ambulance, that one crew was in Newry, were in Newcastle twice. The response times, and you've got them down to 15 minutes there, but the response times, and that's obviously average, the response times in rural areas are still significantly higher than that, and even more so if crews are going as far away from where they are based for the night to the likes of Newcastle. So out of concerns around how often that is happening, obviously if there's a Category 1 call, you're going to have to send the nearest crew there. But even speaking to paramedics, they're coming back to me and saying the amount of times they're sent so far away from the area that they're based and it's leaving no cover in the area. What's been done around that to try and improve it?
Thank you again for your comments. I think we have to recognise that NIOS is now a regional service, and that ambulances will be deployed from stations, but they're not necessarily going to be deployed to their own area. They will be deployed to where the calls are. I can't obviously comment on any of those individual circumstances that you raised. Again, if you want to bring them to us, we can look into for you. Crews have to be deployed to the calls as they come in. You can't necessarily stay within a certain time waiting for a call, I guess.
No, Chair. Yeah, Chair, just if I want to come back on that. That's the point I'm making. So then do we not have those figures that you're giving us for the Newry area, that's 17 paramedics, 3 in Newcastle, 12 in Downpatrick, and just pull them and say that that's right across Newry, Morningdown? Or if we're ringing up, where an ambulance hasn't come out for a long period of time, the rural area, and we're saying there's only one paramedic or one crew station in Newry, they're not actually in Newry, they're in Newcastle. So those figures being broken down by area, for us as elected reps looking at that sideshow, actually doesn't mean that to us. We could have no cover for rural South Armagh because ambulances are up in Newcastle. So I understand you have to send it out to the nearest Category 1 call, but I'm concerned about the level of cover then and how far away the only station ambulance in Newry is if it's way up in Newcastle if somebody has a Category 1 call in Cross Midland. And I understand we have the Cross Midland first responders here and Newtown first responders, but it's the cover, the ambulance cover. So when we're increasing that from, say, 17 to, I think it says, 21.4 or 21.6, in the Newry area, it still doesn't give us the confidence that there is adequate cover for the area if they're serving such a big regional geographical circumference, if you know what I mean. So that's a concern, and it's a concern that I get from speaking to paramedics, and it's a concern that we as councillors get in rural areas after reducing Category 1 response times, especially in South Armagh.
I think it's a very justified concern, and it's a concern that obviously, like you say, our staff bring as well. All I can say is those are the levels of cover that we have within each station at the moment. We can't guarantee at any point where any of our ambulances will be. It's not a great answer, I appreciate that, but I definitely take on board your concerns.
There's nobody else online, and I don't think there's anybody else in the chamber. So again, just to say thank you so much for your presentation this evening. And I think partly based on what Councillor Fahan had said, if there's any resources that councillors could get to share, even if it is making people aware of training sessions that they can do and that sort of thing, I personally would love to get those, and I'm sure other people would as well.
So I thought I was loud enough. We'll get some information out to you. We'll get the resources then. Sorry we didn't bring anything with us today. Yeah. And just to pick up the numbers on the numbers earlier with the cross. If a crew go out and they go to a call, they can be tied up. Other crews will move them around the areas where there's capacity to. But there's also relief staff. So we've got vacancies that will fill those as well. So I think one of the overarching principles is you don't leave a patient to come to harm necessarily. So it is really challenging for the control rooms to do that. They've got separate desks, but there are periods that we do have to have joint responses, such like major incidents, etc. So we can't not respond to those in a coordinated manner.
Yeah, that's great. Listen, thank you all so much. And I think we have another presentation after this. That's the meeting is over. Thank you all very much.